60. Winds and Oaths. I worry about my fellow truth watchers. From drawer 821, Second Emerald. The storm did not belong to Kaladin. He claimed the skies and, to an extent, the winds. High storms were something different, like a country in which he was a visiting dignitary. He retained some measure of respect, but he also lacked real authority. While fighting the assassin in white, Kaladin had traveled with the high storm by flying at the very front of the storm wall, like a leaf caught in a wave. That method, with the full force of the high storm raging at his feet, seemed far too risky to use when bringing others. Fortunately, during their trip to Thelena, he and Shallan had tested other methods. It turned out he could still draw upon the storm's power while flying above it, so long as he stayed within 100 feet or so of the storm clouds. He soared there now with 2 bridgemen and Elokar's chosen team. The sun shone brightly above, and the eternal storm extended in all directions below, swirling black and gray, lit by sparks of lightning, rumbling as if angry at the small group of stowaways. They couldn't see the storm wall now. They'd lagged far behind that. Their angle to Kolinar required them to travel more northward than westward as they cut across the unclaimed hills toward northern Alethkar. There was a mesmerizing beauty to the storm's churning patterns, and Kaladin had to forcibly keep his attention on his charges. There were 6 of those, which made their team 9 in total, counting himself, Scar, and Drahi. King Elokar was at the front. They couldn't bring their suits of shardplate. Lashings didn't work on those. Instead, the king wore thick clothing and a strange kind of glass-fronted mask to block the wind. Shallan had suggested those. They were apparently naval equipment. Adolin came next. Then 2 of Shallan's soldiers, the sloppy deserters she'd collected like wounded axe-hound pups, and 1 maidservant. Kaladin didn't understand why they'd brought those 3, but the king had insisted. Adolin and the others were bundled up as much as the king, which made Shallan look even more odd. She flew in only her blue hava, which she'd pinned to keep it from fluttering too much, with 1 leggings underneath. Stormlights surged from her skin, keeping her warm, sustaining her. Her hair streamed behind her, a stark auburn red. She flew with arms outstretched and eyes closed, grinning. Kaladin had to keep adjusting her speed to keep her in line with the others, as she couldn't resist reaching out to feel the wind between her freehand fingers and waving to Windspren as they passed. "How does she smile like that?" Kaladin wondered. During their trip through the chasms together, he'd learned her secrets, the wounds she hid. And yet, she could simply ignore them somehow. Kaladin had never been able to do that. Even when he wasn't feeling particularly grim, he felt weighed down by his duties or the people he needed to care for. Her heedless joy made him want to show her how to really fly. She didn't have lashings, but could still use her body to sculpt the wind and dance in the air. He snapped himself back to the moment, banishing silly daydreams. Kaladin tucked his arms against himself, making a narrower profile for the wind. This made him move up the line of people so he could renew their stormlight each in turn. He didn't use stormlight to maneuver so much as the wind itself. Scar and Drahi handled their own flight about 20 feet below the group, watching in case anyone dropped for some reason. Lashings renewed, Kaladin maneuvered himself into line between Shallan and King Elokar. The king stared forward through the mask as if oblivious to the wondrous storm beneath. Shallan drifted onto her back, beaming as she looked up at the sky, the hem of her pinned skirts rippling and fluttering. Adolin was a different story. He glanced at Kaladin, then closed his eyes and gritted his teeth. At least he'd stop flailing each time they hit a change in the winds. They didn't speak, as their voices would only be lost to the rushing wind. Kaladin's instincts said he could probably lessen the force of the wind while flying. He'd done so before, but there were some abilities he had trouble deliberately reproducing. Eventually, a line of light flitted from the storm below. It soon looped into a ribbon of light and spun up toward him. "We just passed the Windrunner River," Syl said. The words were more of a mental impression than actual sound.
"We're near Kulinar, then," he said.
"She clearly likes the sky," Syl said, glancing at Shallan. "Unnatural. She almost seems like a Spren, and I consider that high praise."
He sighed and did not look at Shallan.
"Come on,"
Syl said, zipping around to his other side.
"You need to be with people to be happy, Kaladin. I know you do."
"I have my bridge crew," he muttered,
voice lost to the winds, but Syl would be able to hear as he could hear her.
"Not the same, and you know it."
"She brought her handmaid on a scouting mission. She couldn't go a week without someone to do her hair. You think I'd be interested in that?"
"Think?"
Syl said. She took the shape of a tiny young woman in a girlish dress flying through the sky before him.
"I know. Don't think I don't spot you stealing looks,"
she smirked. "Time to stop so we don't overshoot Kulinar," Kaladin said. "Go tell Skarn Drahi." Kaladin took his charges one at a time, canceling their lashing forward, replacing it with a half-lashing upward. There was a strange effect to the lashings that frustrated Sigzil's scientific attempts at terminology. All of his numbers had assumed that, once lashed, a person would be under the influence of both the ground and the lashing. That wasn't the case. Once you used a basic lashing on someone, their body completely forgot about the pull of the ground, and they fell in the direction you indicated. Partial lashings worked by making part of the person's weight forget the ground, though the rest continued to be pulled downward. So a half-lashing upward made a person weightless. Kaladin situated the groups so he could speak to the king, Adolin, and Shallan. His bridgemen and Shallan's attendants hovered a short distance off. Even Sigzil's new explanations had trouble accounting for everything that Kaladin did. He'd somehow made a kind of channel around the group, like in a river, a current sweeping them along, keeping them closer together.
"It really is beautiful,"
Shallan said, surveying the storm, which blanketed everything but the tips of some very distant peaks to their left, probably the Sunmaker Mountains.
"Like mixing paint, if dark paint could somehow spawn new colors and light within its swirls."
"So long as I can continue to watch it from a safe distance," Adolin said. He held Kaladin's arm to keep from drifting away.
"We're close to Kulinar," Kaladin said, "which is good as we're getting near the back edge of the storm and I'll soon lose access to its stormlight."
"What I feel like I'm about to lose," Shallan said, looking down, "is my shoes."
"Shoes," Adolin said. "I lost my lunch back there."
"I can't help imagining something sliding off and dropping into it," Shallan whispered. "Vanishing. Gone forever."
She glanced at Kaladin.
"No wisecracks about missing boots?"
"I couldn't think of anything funny." He hesitated. "Though that hasn't ever stopped you." Shallan grinned.
"Have you ever considered, Bridge Man, that bad art does more for the world than good art? Artists spend more of their lives making bad practice pieces than they do masterworks, particularly at the start. And even when an artist becomes a master, some pieces don't work out. Still others are somehow just wrong until the last stroke. You learn more from bad art than you do from good art, as your mistakes are more important than your successes. Plus, good art usually evokes the same emotions in people. Most good art is the same kind of good. But bad pieces can each be bad in their own unique way. So I'm glad we have bad art, and I'm sure the Almighty agrees."
"All this," Adolin said, amused. "To justify your sense of humor, Shallan?"
"My sense of humor? No. I'm merely trying to justify the creation of Captain Kaladin."
Ignoring her, Kaladin squinted eastward. The clouds behind them were lightening from deep, brooding black and gray to a more general blandness, the color of rock's morning mush. The storm was near to ending. What arrived with a fanfare ended with an extended sigh,
gales giving way to peaceful rain. "Drahi! Scar!" Kaladin called. "Keep everyone in the air. I'm going to go scout below." The two gave him salutes, and Kaladin dropped through the clouds, which, from within, looked like dirty fog. Kaladin came out crusted in frost, and rain began pelting him, but it was growing weak. Thunder rumbled softly above. Enough light seeped through the clouds for him to survey the landscape. Indeed, the city was close, and it was majestic. But he forced himself to look for enemies before marveling. He noted a broad plain before the city, a killing field kept free of trees or large boulders so that neither could offer cover to an invading army. That was empty, which wasn't unexpected. The question was, who held the city? Voidbringers or humans? He cautiously descended. The place glowed with a sprinkling of stormlight from cages left out in the storm to recharge the gems. And, yes, from guard posts flew Alethi flags, raised now that the worst of the storm had passed. Kaladin let out a relieved sigh. Kolinar had not fallen, though if their reports were right, all surrounding towns were occupied. In fact, looking closely, he could see that the enemy had begun building storm shelters on the killing field, bunkers from which they could prevent resupply to Kolinar. They were mere foundations of brick and mortar for now. During the times between storms, they were likely guarded and built up by large enemy forces. He finally let himself stare at Kolinar. He knew it was coming, inevitable as a budding yawn. He couldn't keep it down forever. First assess the area for danger, get the lay of the land. Then, gawk. Storms, that city was beautiful. He'd flown high above it once in a half-dream where he'd seen the Stormfather. That hadn't affected him the way it did to float here, looking over the vast metropolis. He'd seen proper cities now. The war camps together were probably larger than Kolinar, so it wasn't the size that amazed him, really, but the variety. He was accustomed to functional bunkers, not stone buildings of many shapes and roofing styles. Kolinar's defining feature, of course, was the wind blades, curious rock formations that rose from the stone like the fins of some giant creature, mostly hidden beneath the surface. The large curves of stone glittered with red, white, and orange strata, their hues deepened by the rain. He hadn't realized that the city walls were partially constructed on the tops of the outer wind blades. There, the lower sections of the walls literally sprouted from the ground, while men had built fortifications atop them, evening out the heights and filling spaces between the curves. Towering over the northern side of the city was the palace complex, which rose high and confident, as if in defiance of the storms. The palace was like a little city unto itself, with bright columns, rotundas, and turrets. And something was very, very wrong with it. A cloud hung over the palace, a darkness that, at first glance, seemed like nothing more than a trick of the light. Yet the feeling of wrongness persisted and seemed strongest around a portion at the east of the palace complex. This flat, raised plaza was filled with small buildings, the palace monastery, the Oathgate platform. Kaladin narrowed his eyes, then lashed himself back upward, passing into the clouds. He had probably let himself gape for too long. He didn't want to start talk of a glowing person in the sky. Still, that city. In Kaladin's heart still lived a country boy who had dreamed of seeing the world. "Did you see that darkness around the palace?" Kaladin asked Syl.
"Yeah," she whispered. "Something's very wrong."
Kaladin emerged from the clouds and found that his crew had drifted off to the west in the breeze. He lashed himself toward them and noticed, for the first time, that his stormlight was no longer being renewed by the storm. Drahi and Scar looked visibly relieved when he arrived.
"Cal,"
Scar started.
"I know. We don't have much time left. Your Majesty, the city is right below us, and our forces still control the walls. The Parshendi are building storm bunkers and besieging the area.
though the bulk of their army probably retreated to nearby towns in anticipation of the storm.
"The city stands," Elokar said. "Excellent. Captain, take us down."
"Your Majesty," Kaladin said, "if we drop from the sky like this, the enemy scouts will see us entering."
"So," Elokar said, "the need for subterfuge was predicated on a fear that we might have to sneak in. If our forces still hold the city, we can march up to the palace, assert command, and activate the Oath Gate."
Kaladin hesitated.
"Your Majesty, something is wrong with the palace. It looks dark, and Syl saw it too. I advise caution."
"My wife and child are inside," Elokar said. "They might be in danger."
"You didn't seem to worry much about them during 6 years away at war," Kaladin thought.
"Let's go down anyway," the king said. "We want to get to the Oath Gate as soon as possible."
He trailed off, looking from Kaladin to Shallan to Adolin.
"Don't we?"
"I advise caution," Kaladin repeated.
"The bridge man isn't the jumpy type, Your Majesty," Adolin said. "We don't know what's going on in the city or what happened since the reports of chaos and a revolt. Caution sounds good to me."
"Very well," Elokar said. "This is why I brought the Lightweaver. What do you recommend, Brightness?"
"Let's land outside the city," Shallan said. "Far enough away that the glow of stormlight doesn't give us away. We can use illusions to sneak in and find out what is going on without revealing ourselves."
"Very well,"
Elokar said, nodding curtly.
"Do as she suggests, Captain."